I'd like to talk about what is a retreat. Because first of all, it's a kind of a funny word. I think it's appropriately funny. But sometimes, years ago, people would question, like, why do you want a retreat? And so I would just say, well, it's a treat. It's just a treat. We can just call it treat. Let's go on a treat. But I still like that it's a retreat. Because sometimes if I think of a treat, it's like a reward. So I get myself to do something by promising myself a treat. It's something outside of me that's going to be given to make me go out of my way, kind of. But a retreat can give us the sense of, I already know, not in my head, and not with words, probably, unless you have a gift there. But most likely it's not with words that I already know what's good. Not like good, bad, good, but just what's appropriate and helpful and healing and helps me really grow. Helps that in me grow that I would be honored to be part of. So somehow there's recognition in ourselves of that treat, that kind of treat. So retreat in the sense of coming back home to that knowing and also that treating. That kind of yum. And often a feeling of like, really? I can just do that or not do that, more likely. Or I can just be in touch with myself and be in that flow that feels so good. And even though we see that it's powerful and effective and efficient and fun and deep and challenging, like nothing's missing when we stay in touch with our treat, we retreat. It's not like it's that easy, but it's deep hard. It's not repetitive hard. Do you know what I mean? Usually we think of something hard, partly and mostly because we think about it beforehand, how hard that's going to be or how hard that was, but it's mostly a repetition. But when something's kind of good hard, a challenge that we feel we're not quite up to, but somehow we manage to find resources we didn't know were there, and we, whoa. So it's not like it's that easy. It's not an easy way out. And it isn't a way out at all, actually. That's kind of the point. The funny thing, though, is to talk about this can be hard because we've lost track of ourselves and how good life can be and still be hard. Good hard. When we find that good voice, that helpful, sweet and challenging stream, do you know what I mean? Even a little flicker of intuition, we could say. It's so easy to just ignore it. We heard it, but we didn't hear it. We heard it, but tomorrow, later, in the afternoon, next week. Oh, well, okay, next year. When I'm big enough. When no one's looking. Because it's often feels silly, unauthorized, not serious enough, we would think. Because it definitely is not in the book. Because it's not anybody else's story that already happened. It's fresh. And it's your way. So part of the main thing I really deeply wish for here is to start being aware of those flickers of maybe what if I And that could be a small thing, like brush my teeth before breakfast and after breakfast, or what I really actually need to go on a walk now and not rest, or instead of going in the hall right now. Or I need to go in the hall even though it's midnight. Or I need to ask a question. And I don't do questions. I don't talk in groups. I don't talk to teachers or whatever it might be. Or everybody else must need more. I'll be all right. Or that question, I'm not asking. That's too close to home. So we have a structure which includes schedule that's really here to help you. So it can be fun to notice when it starts to feel like an enemy, that schedule, and play with that. So if it's your first retreat, mostly I recommend go with the schedule, at least for a few days, and get into a rhythm where 6 o'clock is not so early or whatever. Or a nap after lunch isn't so hard after all, even though you never do that or whatever. And then we can talk about it, because the schedule that's posted is not anybody's perfect schedule in here. Not mine, not you. It's not the perfect schedule for all of us. It might be maybe the perfect schedule for one person, if we're lucky. And it's only 7 days, so we can go along with it so that we can enjoy being together in it and enjoy all the ways we can bump up against something so simple as a schedule. But it's mostly to get us in touch with what's not a structure. So it's a really weird thing. We have a structure, right now talking about schedule. Wake up at 6 o'clock, movement at 6:30, meditation 7:15, breakfast at 8 o'clock, for example. It's a structure. But my main intention in having that structure posted on the door and on the board is to inspire us to start to find our way to feel my own rhythm, which is different from a structure. Does that make sense at all? So we're not trying to implant structure and try to get some juice out of that. That doesn't work. Does it? It can really help sometimes, because you know how juicy it is to be up in the morning, even though you might be a late night, late morning person. There's something really sweet about the morning, even if we just talk about the birds or the way the air is in the trees at that time of day. And how is it tomorrow morning, let's say, to just be in that atmosphere? What is it? What happens? So we have a group structure to help us feel where there are unhelpful structures built in, habits. So where does our schedule that we're sharing go against your habits? And then our schedule can help you find your way through that wall of habit. It doesn't mean then from now on for the rest of your life you have to do the same thing. Then the structure has served its purpose. You're through that wall of habit. Yeah? And then what? That's the hard and fun part. And on this retreat, we talk about that openly. We don't just pretend that the retreat schedule is the ideal thing that should go on forever. No. Whenever you're ready, let's talk about what you start to feel inspiring as a rhythm. Now or after the retreat by Skype or next year or whatever. It can take a long time to really get a sense of feeling what's really emerging for you that's a thriving energy, that's non-repetitive but has some kind of rhythm, some kind of stability, and some kind of chaos or fun or whatever. For the most part, since it might seem like 7 days is forever, and in some ways it is, actually. One day is forever, for good and for bad. What we're doing here really does last beyond what we're doing here, which is so beautiful. To just be in silence with just even the intention to be in touch with life goes way beyond the frame and the time. And it can really stay with you. Sometimes you're really aware of how it stays with you, something that you discovered on this week. And sometimes it comes up 5 years later, that line that came to you that you wrote down or that you heard someone say or whatever. It just comes back because it's needed and it bears fruit. So for the most part, it's just simple, and simple is helpful, to just go with the schedule pretty much. And then when you start to feel something like getting through a wall of habit, that's important. And then you're through the wall of habit, if you can stay and enjoy that openness and enjoy the unknown. I don't know now. I thought I knew what to do, and I got through that. Good. And now what? That's probably one of the hardest challenges for a human being. To feel that bit of freedom from what I used to think I knew. I thought I knew. And now I know I don't know. And to actually enjoy that, the lightness and the special kind of power that's available there, which is not a... It's usually not much brute force. It's kind of more of a twinkling, sort of. But it's so intense that we want to structure back. So part of the treat is simple. You don't have to think about what to make for lunch or what to order for lunch because somebody already did that for you. Kind of for good and for bad. And it's unbelievable. It's even after now 16 years of leading retreats and 30 years of going on retreats. 30 years, yeah. It's unbelievable how much work goes into making something so simple happen. And again, Ellen already thanked you, but I just am impressed and grateful and kind of overwhelmed by what you've done, Ellen, and all the people you've connected to what they can also do to make this simple for us. So part of the treat is simple, not much to think about. A lot to feel, a lot of room to feel. But still basically simple. There's room to feel your direct experience, whatever it may be, and to notice where your ideas might get in the way and say, oh, that's not my experience, that's not me, that's not allowed. So I'd like to read part of a poem by Wendell Berry and those who've been on this retreat the last few years. I haven't read you this poem, but I've had this or others of his books with me pretty much every year the last couple of years. So he's on the back of the book. Last I heard, he's still living in Kentucky on his farm. He's also a poet, obviously, and an activist for the environment. This poem is called Enriching the Earth. To enrich the earth, I have sowed clover and grass to grow and die. I have plowed in the seeds of winter grains and of various legumes, their growth to be plowed in to enrich the earth. I just want to say, it's not a great poem, which is one reason I like it. It's a good poem. We can really go with him so simply. Just plowing things into the earth, growing things into the earth, letting it grow and die, and putting it all back in. And he's talking about us. He's talking about his farm, and he's talking about us through his experience. He's talking about what we're doing. We're letting things grow and die and just keep plowing it back in. Their growth to be plowed in to enrich the earth. And that's part of why I like this word retreat. Because to get disillusioned with advance is important. To get unaddicted from advancing is a key, is illuminating. And that's what he's talking about. Something grew, great, plow it back in. That's all, plow it back in. Most often. So their growth to be plowed in to enrich the earth. I have stirred into the ground the offal, O-F-F-A-L, but I think that he might be playing on the sound, like awful, 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 like whatever's extra leftover, dirty, caca. And the decay, so I've stirred into the ground the offal and the decay of the growth of past seasons, and so mended the earth and made its yield increase by stirring it all in. Something starts to get that rich that we can start to notice there's more abundance. All this serves the dark. I am slowly falling into the fund of things. And yet to serve the earth, not knowing what I serve. To serve the earth, not knowing what I serve, gives a wideness and a delight to the air. And my days do not wholly pass. Wholly, W-H-O-L-L-Y. They don't entirely pass. It is the mind's service, for when the will fails to do the hands, and one lives at the expense of life. After death, willing or not, the body serves, entering the earth. And so what was heaviest and most mute is at last raised up into song. So maybe we'll let the manager's choice copy the poem so you can also read it and not worry too much about holy, holy, awful, awful. The plays on the words that he had. So he's talking about a different kind of mind. It is the mind's service. So a mind that's serving is not the mind that we usually talk about. We usually talk about the mind that's advancing, or is all about whether I'm advancing or not, which might be, oh, I never advance. But it still wishes that it could, kind of, or thinks that it should. But the mind that's in service, it's the mind's service, for when the will fails, so do the hands, and one lives at the expense of life. So a mind that's serving, so not just this mind up here, but a kind of wide mind with the air of with delight in the air. That is more effective and reliable than the will, that keeps going even when I give up, so that we're not living at the expense of life. We feel the cut of that, from living at the expense of life, that poverty, and feeling that feeling of giving everything, stirring it in as an enrichment that is not about willpower. And it's not even about when I'm just at the end of my resources. I think I'm at the end of my resources, and then something comes through. And then he just jumps suddenly after death, willing or not, the body serves, entering the earth. And it's not just about that body death, but the letting go of what we thought we were, and especially what we thought we had to be or should be. Just letting that be heavy and fall down so that whatever is alive in it can kind of have a chance to lift up and raise up into song. Are there any questions or anything to share so far? We have time, but it's also rich to raise questions and non-questions, just sharing. Yeah, please.
How can life be good and hard at the same time?
Good. Could you hear? How can life be good and hard at the same time? Yeah. That is exactly the question. And I would like to give some response from my experience, but in a way, that's exactly where I'd love you to be entering this retreat, is with that question. Is it possible? So our training, our education is that good is easy and hard is bad. And we believe it. I'd like to give a few different suggestions of lines of investigation. Some of them more kind of mental and some of them more experiential. And one is someone who grew up in Atlanta, and then I went to India when I was 20. And I didn't know I wouldn't come back, but I didn't come back. And I met one teacher, and then I met another teacher, and I stayed. And that's where I started teaching also Dharma and meditation. And by being away so long and coming to visit and shop, which is a really good place to go shopping, I have a love for this place that I didn't have, because as growing up I didn't really know what is this culture is so spread out and so mainstreamized across the planet that it's hard to know that there is a culture or there are cultures of the place. And so I feel acutely aware of the peculiarities of us. I'm kind of still in us and kind of not. But one thing that's so poignant is to see how easy in general we have it here. So we have the problem of the air conditioning. I don't have that problem on retreats in India because there's not air conditioning. If there were, it wouldn't work most of the time. But we have the problem of I like it 2 degrees cooler than you like it, and it's really, we're so accustomed to having it to the degree. Not everybody, of course, but a lot of people. That's normal here. It's not normal. It's absolutely not normal. But it's become normalized. So that's just one example of many. And it's not all bad, but it's so easy to go for the easy and then to not realize that I'm stuck with easy now. And then there's disagreements because I can't take anything but easy. So if we could feel times where it wasn't easy, but it was good. And also just seeing the trend of this country that's so similar to sort of the fall of Rome kind of feeling. It's so much too good of the pleasant, easy, comfortable, delicious, outrageous, trying to get a high, trying to get a rise, having to go further out, further out, further out. And there's not much happiness going on. So, and we're also not saying that easy is bad. That's not true. It doesn't work that way either. That would be too easy. And some people go that way. Like, I'll just make it really hard on myself, and then I can feel that I must be doing it right. I can think that I must be doing it right, and I can relax. We talked about kids earlier. Something that's really helpful for me that I heard when my son was maybe 3 or 4 from a friend who worked with kids. And she said, especially for boys, she was talking about doing a movement class with kids. She said, especially for boys, if she gave them a challenge soon enough, then the class worked great. And if she didn't give the boys a challenge soon enough, there was no way to get through. And so that helped me notice that, whether we want to call it the boy in me or just me, I also need a challenge soon enough. Or it doesn't. I'm not really here anymore. So that's another kind of feeling for where we actually love a challenge. And what is it that we don't like about a challenge? I think the main thing I've noticed in myself and others that I don't like about a challenge is when I take it as an insult. So because I've been taught that easy is good and right, if things are going bad, I assume maybe I did something wrong or maybe somebody did something wrong to me, and I've got to fix that first and then be okay. But the actual challenge many times, not to say it isn't still hard, brings out in us what nothing else could have, and brings out in relationships sometimes what nothing else could have. I have a friend who knows that she's a healer, but this is one of my favorite excuses not to do what the calling is. She said something like, and I mentioned this in this retreat one other time a couple years ago, I think. Something like, if only I'd started young enough, if I would have started earlier. So that's a really good excuse. It's not like, oh, later I'll get to it. It's like, if only I'd started soon enough, then I could be a healer. I was like, what? So you're going to law school? And she's recently, her mother's been very ill, life near death situation 3 times, miracle recovery in the last couple months. And that's a challenge. And it's just brought her into this flow of how that healing part might be. Dealing with medical doctors, dealing with family, dealing with her own feelings, dealing with her mother, who's dying but not. So it's not, we wouldn't ever say, oh, we wish that her mother would die or something like that, but we are gonna all die. The mother is elderly. And something good is coming out of that, that she can feel both vulnerable and strong in the recovery, that retreat into her goodness. One really easy example is like just stretching the body. It sometimes, if we don't overdo it, it does hurt. It's pretty uncomfortable sometimes. And it feels kind of good. And afterwards feels really good. And is good when done regularly, etc. And sometimes that just simple example helps me when it's more of a subtle or emotional or even spiritual kind of challenge, which will happen in this room this week at least twice. If the question is like, what is retreat and what are we actually doing here? That question will probably come, what am I doing here? Tonight or tomorrow probably will come. And now I don't take it as a bad sign. I take it as a good sign. I take it as you're really getting into contact. And part of you is like, no, not contact. Contact has meant bad news in the past. No one met me when I was really myself in the past. And I don't want to be all alone in that intensity of being alive. But then some part is like, even if I'm all alone, I'm in. So it's not even a bad sign. It's very similar feeling to stretching and staying. Not overdoing it, not showing off, not trying to copy somebody else, but just your own body just, and it feels good and it's uncomfortable, and it feels good and it's uncomfortable, and then we can release a little more. So as something more experiential to get a feeling flavor, to trust, because it's so often, it's just really key to just stay a little bit longer, not reacting by pushing the stretch farther or getting out of the stretch or doing anything fancy with the stretch whatsoever. Just, it feels good and it's uncomfortable. There's some relief and some release that hurts. But I'm not hurting myself. And I'm not hurting myself because they told me to, like they're not hurting me. As a kind of atmosphere reference point. And then we can talk about the other side too, where it's not that hard is good. It's not that hard equals good. But sometimes good is good. Sometimes when we're really in our path, it's just so good. And I keep saying that's probably the big challenge, but this is really the big challenge. Yeah. Especially to that part that wants to advance. If it hurts but it's good, there's some part of me that can be entertained. Like, I'm doing something that hurts that's good for me. Like, I can feel like, yeah, I'm earning my right to be here. And when it's just so good, undeservedly, we don't know why. I didn't do it. It's happening. I feel it. And my cells recognize it and they're rejoicing. And it could be really not like, woohoo! It could be really quiet also, like, this is so good, but so not much. Or it could be, this is so good. People have orgasms in the meditation hall, by the way. It's not required, but don't be alarmed, you know. It's not. I have not received hundreds of reports over the years, but sometimes it can be really, 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 really good to do nothing. And I do think that the quality of that good is so different from the quality of good when I think good equals I'm getting it right. Good equals advance. Because we really can recognize in a whole body, whole system kind of way that it's just somehow given. It's somehow happening. And my doings and non-doings had a part in allowing this to happen, but it's really clear that I didn't make this happen. And that's partly why it's so good. The fact that we don't know why, where it comes from, who it belongs to, or even how did my body know this, like what? That there is a knowing of what is appropriate and life-sustaining. There's a body knowing that we can recover. And I think it's good to clarify there as well, because sometimes it's helpful to have really simplify these sort of lines, these little bites, these little mottos or phrases that we carry along. And one of them is that the body never lies, and that's not true in my experience. There's ways that the body tells the truth when we can't. Like in the last few days, I've heard so many people say, I was going along, no, that was okay, but I was avoiding this, and then I got sick, and I could only lie down. And then I realized, wow, lying down is something other than what I thought. So there are ways that it's true that the body doesn't lie, but there are ways that the body does lie. So in a situation of release that can be both relief and uncomfortable, it can be extremely uncomfortable. You can feel nausea, hot, cold, shaking, gotta get out of here, hate myself, hate everybody, hate the world, hate God, hate life, whatever. That can be part of good. and the body's saying, yuck. But something else that's also connected to the body is still saying either yes or okay, or okay, a little longer. We'll see. And that's another part of that retreat or recovery. It's a recovery of the deeper voice, the deeper direction or guide. That even when it seems like our whole being is like, no, some little quiet voice that's not going to fight about it, it's just simply saying, yes, this is what your life is here with or in or for. There's not really the right word for the end of the sentence. This is what your life is. And so when it's just good, and it's good, to stay with that also. So that little hint of just staying a little bit longer than is comfortable, whether it's a little bit hard or a little bit good or very hard, very good, but the deeper, almost silent yes is there. Just an experiment with, okay, a little bit longer there. Not because I'm making you do it, but that little voice is there. Little best guess. Sometimes I think of flower, and we have the idea flower equals beauty, flower equals good, but sometimes it looks like it's so much work. And also it's that usually so slow. Sometimes I will try to watch it bloom. It's hard. Some flowers you can see it, but usually not. And that's pretty much how we are. And it's not always flowering time. It's not always springtime. So it's another kind of watching or tuning in or another kind of motivation. Did you have a question before?
I guess I just remember feeling like when you started the poem and you talked about enriching the earth, my first thought was like, how can you improve the earth? It's so perfect. And then I guess that reflects a little bit about, you know, that we're so perfect and that there's really nothing fix per se, but there's just like an awakening that can happen to our perfection.
Exactly. Yeah. There's that already good. There's also that already aware. That he's. I love his description. I am slowly falling into the fund of things. And yet to serve the earth, not knowing what I serve, gives a wideness and a delight to the air. And my days do not wholly pass. So we can hold the sense in ourself of already good and already awake and hurting and contracted and reactive and habit ridden and still already good and already awake, and letting that meet each other. Sometimes there are sparks, but mostly it is that delicious feeling of I'm slowly falling into the fund of things. So I'm slowly falling into the already richness of things. So not that absolute, but that absolute in things. How the richness comes through in real life. But also where they come, the fund of things gives a sense also of the source of things, but not separate from them. The richness of the things is part of the richness of the source of things. And then, and yet to serve the earth. So it's not escaping that I'll get to that absolute already awake, already okay, already good, and then I'll kind of hang out there. But that naturally the flowing is to serve the earth. To serve what looks low. And to serve what we thought of as dark in a way that we avoided. And now we're drawn into that. So falling into the fund of things, and then we could even say impulse or urge, but not a reaction, to serve the earth. Not knowing what I serve. So it's the first time in North Carolina we've been in a Christian center. And so it reminds me of that tradition of not having, I mean, we have actually some different images of God around the room, but there's the tradition of not having an image of God. So not knowing what I serve, not limiting what that life movement is ready to give everything for and into. And yet following the movement anyway. So it's without confirmation, allowing love to be the movement. And then finding out it gives a wideness and a delight to the air. And time changes, my days do not wholly pass. Is there any other thing to share or ask? Equally, could be something just to mention or to ask.
The phrase you said keeps going to my mind, the unaddiction to advancement. Mm. I wonder about the times when that feels like giving up in a despairing way.
Yeah.
And what purpose that is.
Yeah. So that feels like it could be interesting to go into more detail tomorrow and a little bit now, because that's a good big one. Sometimes even despair is a good threshold that we can pass through and just shed a lot of unnecessary sense of obligation and pressure and false direction. So even despair is not off the chart of a spiritual path. And some people put it right at the peak or the beginning, depending on who you talk to, of the spiritual path. So it is sometimes when we kind of face no more will to keep going towards advancing, and not even belief in the idea of advancing. That is actually sometimes something getting born. That is a genuine motivation or genuine inspiration. In Buddhism, it would be actually called a right view. So meaning that wideness with delight and different sense of time, where the way of actually orienting in the world and to the world is radically shifted. And it's no longer me being watched, and am I doing it right or wrong? And are they doing it right or wrong? It's no longer pressure. But then we speak to ourselves, first very, very quietly, but something starts to bubble up inside that's wholly different. Not necessarily dramatic change in the outer life, but it's a wholly different quality. It's a good time, if possible, that there could be a friend or two to at least hold hands with getting through that time. But it's kind of where we feel, on the one side, giving up everything that I was taught to be or do is just on the other side of that. It's like the same hand, but the other side is where I'm not willing to live this way, because there's a knowing that that was not what life is about. And I didn't realize that there was a way to know step by step what life is from the inside. because I didn't get empowered in that way as a child or whatever by the culture, etc. So on the same, that rock bottom of I hate life can really be right on the other side of the same hand, can be like, oh, I hate that life. I hate living that way. And that's intelligent. That's smart. That's true. Living that way is not living. And let's find that out before we die. Right on the other side of that is, well, if I can't do any of that right, or whatever the, you know, it might be about success, it might be about love, it might be about rejection, it might be, like, what's this key phrase of the pain or the wound? Right on the other side, if I can't get love, or if I can't get acceptance, or if I can't get success or respect or safety or whatever, okay, then something that's still, just like in the poem, that other kind of mind, that's sort of the whole deep mind, that the willpower is gone, the body's not going to get out of bed, but something is, love's aliveness is in touch with aliveness and can start to. So it's not always possible without some help. You almost always, we need some help. And sometimes those moments seem to be moments that part of it that seems to last forever, we have to go through alone. And it seems so desolate. But then it does give a certain confidence because it is so rock bottom. And then we actually did find our real voice. We find out 10 years later, we realize 10 years later that that's what we did. But it starts to move us. And that we did that alone is sometimes the medicine that some wounds kind of need to go through, or I don't know, need to, but do go through, and it works out as confidence. I don't like to put it as if, oh, it's all for the best. I don't think that necessarily it's all for the best. But we can make the best out of, we can stir it in and let it be richness. So sometimes that's leaving room for sadness. Sometimes that's staying a little longer than we would have with that stretch. Sometimes it's like, help! And that main missing piece of receptivity opens up because we are that desperate. And then that is the beginning or the peak. Yeah. So why don't we, I think we have walking meditation now. So I'll just give a few words about my experience with walking meditation, and you can explore in your own way, and there's some on the board about it. And then we meet back in the hall in 45 minutes, is that right?
Actually, 15. I thought it started at 7:15, meditation till 8.
Oh, okay, cool. So maybe we'll change that,
yeah.
If that's okay.
Yeah.
So that it's till 7, we'll have half an hour walking, and meet back at 7:30 to 8:15 meditation. So, if you want to stand. And already feeling how standing is different from lying down or sitting, and just letting that kind of dawn on you inside, and maybe feeling company in the natural world with standing. So like the way these, I don't understand how flowers do that, but they do. And also trees, grass, just feeling that standing up thing. As a wordless state that has body and mind in it. And sometimes it's really helpful posture to remember that you're allowed to stand, you're just allowed to stand. Sometimes it can be a really challenging posture, so not to be alarmed if sometimes you think, well, maybe I'll just stand. during this walking meditation for half an hour. And sometimes it's amazing, because you would have stood in line for half an hour at some point, probably. Things aren't that convenient here. It must be lines of half an hour. And no problem, really. But sometimes if you think, I'll just stand for half an hour, after 5 minutes, it's too much. You feel heat and nausea and dizzy. And so in case that happens, don't be alarmed. That's somehow normal. It's a strong posture. So then you might want to shift your posture if that happens, and you can come back to standing. So if you feel like having the feet a little bit apart and your eyes closed and just playing with letting your weight move around on your feet. And for now, feel free if something comes to mind, like you feel like a tree moving in the wind or something, and that helps you get into a feeling of connection and flow, then that's great. But it's certainly also great, just really direct and simple, feeling what you feel physically. And still just continuing with the eyes closed and the feet apart and shifting your weight around or back and forth or whatever. You could play with having your sense of where you are in your body. Try being in your back, for example, while standing. So feeling your back is one way. So that could be feeling the whole back of your body, back of the head down to the heels, or just the back of the main body. Or how is it to be in the lower belly while just standing and shifting your weight? And meanwhile, letting the body be friendly with the ground and the ground friendly with the body. Letting what's heavy kind of have a sense of dropping down. The earth. So we can start to recover also the animal body. And if you've ever been around wild animals, that sort of really brisk freshness and ease that's there. Letting that be present in yourselves. And you could play with being in your feet. So that means feeling the feet, or as a sense of shifting your center of attention into the feet, or pouring your presence into your feet. And then if you wish, just let your eyes open, and if you want to take a couple steps. You can walk fast or slow outside, but there is a chance to walk slowly. And I would recommend playing with that sometimes if you want to. And if you do, just know it's normal that there's a balance issue when you walk slowly. So it can feel kind of like, whoa, I'm on one foot for a little longer than usual. But it can really feel, first of all, kind of lovingly towards the feet, that they do so much holding us up. And then all the sensation, wherever you're tuning in, the back or the belly or the feet or the whole body, that whole field. So many different kinds of sensation. Heavy and light and texture and temperature. Movement, pulsing, vibration. And then also kind of, we could say, subtle feeling, where putting my foot down has so many different aspects. And when I'm just about to lift my foot, has a really different quality, or a slightly different quality from when it's just lifted up or when it's moving forward. And there could be sometimes a kind of love affair with all of that. Or it could just be sometimes a chance to really feel the simplicity of going nowhere. And so much of the time during the walking meditations, you might want to just choose a place to either walk back and forth or in around. So, yeah. If you want to be inside, that's also fine. But not in this space, because this will be for stillness, except in the movement session at 6:30. And then I would also recommend maybe once a day at least that you kind of just go on a walk, that you don't know where you're going. That's not necessarily a plan. And that could be like that wild animal is just going around, or the child is looking for a little magic spot. At any time might just see a bug or a rock, like you'll see my son doing all the time, because he's into bugs and rocks. And if you notice that you're walking, and maybe sometimes I remember my shoulders would be upset, it's like, interesting that I'm just walking, but my shoulders are really busy. And so it's a great practice just to pause and remember not to be an adult, maybe, or maybe look at the sky or a blade of grass. Or there's a kind of eco exercise of marking out a meter square or a yard square and just walking your fingers. And it sounds really silly, and it is in a way, but it's amazing how that can really help connect with the world. It's like this whole other world there again. And it's not just me not doing walking meditation right. You know, it's kind of, oh, okay. Right, it's not all about me. And then there's one more really subtle aspect. I know you're tired, but I want to mention it, if I may. Or actually, I save it for tomorrow. Go for it. Okay. I can mention it tomorrow, too, if you're like, what was that thing about? So let's say you're about to lift your foot. You're really, really just about to lift it. And then you don't. You're just about to lift it. And then you don't. It can help feel for something. It's a mental movement that I feel as a kind of a almost like an electrical oomph that is the mind telling the body you could move now. It's not the actual signal that moves the muscles, because it's separate from the muscle movement. But it's a mind event that happens. They call it technically in Buddhism intention, but it's not anything to do with that, like wake up in the morning and what are my intentions for the day thing. It's not verbal. But so you can really feel for that event before lifting the foot. For example, you could play with lifting your arm, putting your arm down. And then gradually with practice, don't try to catch all of them because you'll go crazy. But here and there, you might start to notice that there's that little oomph before. For example, you see some trash next to the path, and you automatically pick it up, which is cool. But when that's purely habit or pressure or trying to be good or do good or something, it's really great to catch that moment and then freely pick it up or freely not pick it up. Freely have the right amount of food, like feeling that, what's that habit of eating too little or what's that habit of eating too much for what feels good to you. And then in daily life, all the chances to not say that thing and to say that thing, to catch that. And eventually with practice, even before a thought, you can feel that about to think that thought, and it's like, nah. And it just starts, it's like a node of a wave about to happen, and it just goes, nah. So gradually with time, it doesn't work like gathering mushrooms or something that you get more in by being busy. It's just having it kind of in the back of your mind that you might catch that oomph, or you might even decide to play with it during a walking or two, you just feel like moving the oomph before the movement can help start to tune into that part of our experience in all the other areas, especially before speaking and doing or censoring. Yeah. Any questions? Okay, so enjoy. And now that we have 20 minutes for walking, which is about right, I think, and we'll meet back here for a meditation.